Welcome to Habs Unfiltered. This independent podcast is featured on the Hockey Writers and iHeartRadio, bringing you honest and unfiltered entertainment and discussion on the Montreal Canadiens and hockey news. Your hosts, Matt Smith, Treg Wilson, and Blaine Putney, are proud to be one of your trusted sources. If you are talking about it, so are we. And welcome to Habs Unfiltered, episode 293. I am your host, Blaine Putvey, and I'm joined now by my co-host, Treg Wilson.
Hello.
And Matt Smith.
Good evening.
For this episode, we're post-game after the Columbus Blue Jackets game where the Canadiens won 3-1. We're going to talk a little bit about the Buffalo game, a few things that happened in that one that played yesterday. We'll talk about the game tonight and some odds and ends. So when we come back, we will begin with the Buffalo game. Welcome to Habs Unfiltered. This independent podcast is featured on the Hockey Writers and iHeartRadio, bringing you honest and unfiltered entertainment and discussion on the Montreal Canadiens and hockey news. Your hosts, Matt Smith, Treg Wilson, and Blaine Putney, are proud to be one of your trusted sources. If you are talking about it, so are we. Well, there we go. The new Prior Media intro sounds almost exactly like the old independent Habs Unfiltered intro.
I never saw or heard anything.
Me neither.
I don't know about you, Matt, but I didn't see or hear.
You won't until you listen to the show.
Okay.
Well, I guess I'm going to do some editing.
Yeah.
I'm going to put it in the chat, boys.
Done.
All right, well, in that case, we will talk to Cryer Media about fixing that for us, because old men and technology don't mix. Anyhow, episode 293, here we go. We'll start with the Buffalo game. The Canadians got absolutely decimated in at home against the Sabres. I mean, the first couple of periods, it was pretty good. It was pretty close. But in the third, the Sabres just completely dominated. Absolutely dominated. That in the first 3 minutes of the game, where the Canadians dug themselves a massive 3-0 hole in the... It was just... I don't know. So, Treg, why don't you start?
Well, the defense was terrible. From the top line right down to the bottom defensive pairing. I don't know. I can't even count how many high definition chances the Sabres had, but they had almost every shot was pretty much coming from the slot or in a scoring area. Allen wasn't all that great. I don't think Allen's been all that great the last few games, even the win against Philly. I didn't think he played all that well. Maybe he's playing too much. Maybe they should start playing Monty more. Actually, I think they should, which is weird because last year I thought Monty should be in the AHL. But Skinner is just a Canadiens killer. again, that's like the Columbus game last week. It was a game that they should have won, and I think they kind of were – played it like they thought they were going to win, maybe. I think they were overconfident to start the game, and then once they got down 3-0, they just started panicking, and they didn't know what else to do. I guess the highlight, Cole Caulfield smoker from the Ovechkin spot. It was a beautiful goal that made it 3-1. So you did get the thought that, oh, this isn't over. And then it went 4-1 and then 4-2. And then after that, it was just a disaster. But Yeah, it's almost like the third period they thought, you know what, we ain't coming back on this one, boys. Let's back off and get ready for the next game, because they were playing tonight, of course. And it was just a gong show. It was just a bad game from start to finish. Like,
it really was.
Besides the two goals, there was no. You can't even sit there and say, well, they only play bad. But no, they played bad for 59 minutes and 30 seconds. So, yeah, it was just terrible. Power play. Although the power play looked good in the zone, they didn't shoot. All they did was pass around and try to find that. Again, we talked about this before. Try to find that perfect pass, that perfect seam, or that perfect shot. They didn't try to create anything. And they went 0 for 6, I think, 0 for 5, 0 for 6 or something like that on the power play. And,
yeah, 0 for 6, yeah.
They had possession the entire, almost every power play. There was very few power plays they weren't in the zone. And they had, but they just, instead of making shots, making chaos, they just tried to find that perfect shot. That's it. That's all I got to say about it, really. There's really nothing to say about it.
Well, I mean, it kind of highlights the fact that the Canadians absolutely need their goaltending to be near the top of the league so that they continue to be able to win these games. So that's a game that they could have won had Allen played the way he had the first 10 to 15 games of the season. Yeah. You know, I think the saves above expected, him and Montembeau have been, as a tandem, second or third overall in the NHL. And that's where they need them to play if they want to win these types of games. But unfortunately, Allen had a tough night. I mean, this is going to happen. And then they started to come back, but then the whole team just collapsed in the third.
Oh, it's like I said, it just seemed like they were like, you know what, fuck this. We got Columbus tomorrow. You know, we're already down. I think they went down 5-2, and it's almost like they're just like, yeah, okay, this is over. And then two more goals went in, and it was all, you know, Allen was having his Patrick Waugh moment. So,
yeah, he broke his stick over the net afterwards.
Yeah.
And I don't blame him.
No.
Now, I know the defense had a bit of a hard time as well, but not much more than normal. I mean, Harris had a tough night. The pairings just didn't work that well. And everyone just kept complaining that Jack Eye wasn't in. But I'm going to be honest, I don't think having Jack Eye in the lineup in that game would have made much of a difference, other than he could have bought someone after they made dirty hits, like the hit on Suzuki in the second period, where he went face first into the boards after a hit from behind.
I think it's just that Buffalo was a bigger team. And I think...
I don't know, bigger. They were just more aggressive.
My thought on it was, I thought Jack Eye would have been better for the Buffalo game and Harris the Columbus game. Just because of that. But I think you're right. I don't think it would have mattered. Jack Eye wouldn't have made that much of a difference that, okay, maybe it might have been 5-2. But you know what I mean? Like, I don't think he would have made that much of a difference. The only difference I find he makes in a game is people second guess going down his side. And you can see it in the games. There are players that'll see that he's on that side. They'll cut more to the middle than try to go down the boards. And that's about the only difference I find between when you have Jack Eye on the ice and say Harris or Kovacevic, who was out as well. Weidman. I thought Weidman had a pretty good game, actually, to be honest with you. I didn't think Weidman played, but he made some pretty good plays. He was on the power play. But other than that, you know, Matheson had a rough game. Edmondson had a rough game. It wouldn't have mattered. I don't think that bottom pairing really made. I don't even know what their plus minus was or what their goals against were when they're on the ice. I'm not sure, but I'm pretty sure most of the goals were against the top two pairings, not the bottom pairing. So,
yeah, the only real plus out of this was that Slafkovský got himself about 14 minutes of ice time, and he was 50% on the faceoff dot.
Yeah, one for two or something, wasn't it?
One for two. got some shots on net. He blocked a couple of shots. I mean, overall, he personally had a decent game. But that hit on Suzuki that I mentioned earlier, when I bringing up Slafkovský, reminds me of this. Didn't he get 2-game suspension for a similar hit?
So did Anderson.
Well, no, Anderson's was... He bought tickets and flew there.
Yeah, but I'm just saying, the point is the hit on Suzuki wasn't much different than either one of those hits, except Anderson knew what he was doing. I don't know, maybe the injury had something to do with it. I mean, not only did he get a 2-game suspension, but he also got a 5-minute game and a 5-minute and a 10-minute game misconduct. Suzuki wasn't hurt. He wasn't, or anything like that. So I think it just, I don't know. We all know what the refereeing is like in the NHL. According to Gary Bettman, it's the best in the world. According to anyone who has eyeballs, it's terrible. So, and they're not held accountable. And that I've said this for years on the show, we have to start having the referees held accountable. There has to be, you know, you make so many bad calls, you stop doing games for a while. You know what I mean? Hey, you're not making these calls. You're not doing your job right. You're not doing these next 3 games. You know what I mean? And then once they start losing money, or once they start not getting the games, like, okay, they do it for the playoffs. Only the best referees go to the finals. But maybe they should start doing it for the regular season too. And coaches and players should be able to call out a referee and say, hey, in a respectful way. You know what I mean? And respectful and say, hey, you know, if you're calling it like a post game, a coach should be able to say, if you're calling a hook, call it on everyone. That's fine. If you're not calling the hook, then don't call it. Right. But they can't even do that. They can't, you know, they can't say one word about the refs and how they dictated the game, and refs do dictate the game, or else they get fined. But refs seem to be able to let things go, make terrible calls. Tonight, Edmondson got high stick. Two referees standing there looking at it, not one call. So,
yeah, what was Edmondson took the high stick that Edmondson took was off the stick of someone who was a foot shorter than him. Like, how do you not see someone's arms in the air?
I mean, it's not like Edmondson flopped to the ice or anything. He just kind of went like that. Nope. put his kick. But there's a ref at the net, and there's a ref standing right over there, both looking in the same direction. No one saw that.
Well, the hit Suzuki took from behind was literally right next to a referee.
That's my point. You want players to not get hurt, then you've got to start calling stuff like that. To me, I find they call way too much interference and hooking and all this other stuff that you're like, you know what? That, you know, when you go under to lift the stick, it's a hook now. You know what I mean? Like, let that shit go. But high sticks, make sure you call every single one of them. Check them from behind, every single one of them. You know, dangerous check into the boards, every single one of them, right? Like, there should be no ifs, ands, or buts. A stick goes up, a face goes back. If you think it was a teammate stick and not a play, go look at it. Oh, no, wait. That, you know what I mean? Like, go look.
And why if not? Someone's faking it, you know, faking a shot to the face from a stick, people see it on the replay, find them.
Yeah, find them. Or give them the Stutzel penalty.
Yep.
2 minutes for Stutzeling. You know what I mean? Like, there is a penalty for diving. There's a penalty for faking a penalty. This isn't the World Cup. You know, yeah. Anyway, I don't know. It's one of those
things. Leave the faking to our wives.
Until the head of the league starts recognizing there's an issue, then the issue's never going to be fixed.
Yeah, that's true. I won't argue that at all. But to move on from that, we'll... There's one more thing about that game that I wanted to bring up, and that was Jeff Skinner, who absolutely dominates the Habs every time he plays them, decided that it'd be a good idea for the guy who's up 7-2 in a game on a team that just lost 8 in a row and hasn't seen a playoff game in a decade to start chirping the other bench. to the point where the Canadiens bench was confused, giving weird looks, and the referee actually told him, just shut the fuck up. Matt, what do you say about that?
I don't think he's got much to chirp about. I didn't personally see it as I was air forcing. Yeah. But
zoom.
Yeah, exactly. I'd say he doesn't have really much to talk about. Yeah, your team's up in the game, but as you said, it's not like they've been playing great as of late. So, you know, kind of keep your mouth shut type thing. You got the lead. You're gonna go home with a win. Just take it and just shut your mouth, because the players that are on the bench are gonna remember that for the next time they play.
What's your trick?
I wasn't listening.
Well, you're
honest. Chirping on the bench about the chirping. I didn't see it, to be honest with you. I didn't watch the that much of the game. I was kind of half watching it, half not watching it because it was so terrible. I don't know, if you're up by like that and you're spanking a team that bad, why are you chirping? You know what I mean? Like, you've owned them your entire career. Everyone knows this. They actually talked about it on the show, on the broadcast, about how well you play against the Canadiens. I think they know. You don't have to chirp it. So.
Yeah. All right. Well, we'll move on from that. But before we get into the Columbus game, a little tidbit. I was listening to Tony Marinaro's podcast, The Sick Podcast, which I would recommend to anybody. It's a great, great pod. And Tony, being plugged in a little bit with the Canadiens and some of the behind the scenes folks, in his episode, the latest episode, the one from last night, as we record, it's post game Columbus, 23rd November. So his 22 November episode, he mentioned that the New Jersey Devils are extremely interested in Josh Anderson. So, Matt, what do you think of that?
It's just kind of something that's been popped up. It seems that every time a trade comes up with the Canadiens, it's got something to do with Josh Anderson, whether it be now the Devils, Calgary, and then you name off a team, they probably want Josh Anderson. He's a player that the Canadiens have been looking for quite a long time. And I'm a fan of his. I've got his jersey. I wouldn't give him up. Like, there'd have to be quite the package. And, like, I know that they've got a lot of young players, but it's not like you're going to get, a Luke Hughes out of them or something like that. You're going to get another piece, but is it something that would be worth it long-term for the Canadiens, or do you just keep a guy in the lineup that you've been looking for how many years now?
I would trade him in a heartbeat if the return's good. You have Slefkovský, he's going to be your power forward of the future. And with his money and his contract and the length of his contract and the money, if you can get a first pick and a good prospect or a second line player from the Devils, I'd go for it. Anderson, I love Anderson. I love what he brings. He's not consistent enough for me to hold on that strongly to.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with you, Treg, that with Slutkovsky coming up, he'll take over that power forward role. They've added Doc, who has some size to his game. He doesn't play power forward style, but he can battle through the physical aspects of the game real well. And they're slowly adding more and more size to the lineup. So having Anderson there is not as essential as it once was. Although, don't get me wrong, I love keeping him on the team. But I think you're right. With his cap, that's, you know, 5.5 for that long, playing the style that he is at his age, with him and Gallagher on the line, on the lineup, one of them's going to have to end up being moved. And right now, Anderson is the it guy. Everybody wants him.
He's the easier guy. He's the easier guy to move because his value's getting higher.
Yeah.
But
exactly.
You take him out of the lineup, it fucking kills scoring on the wings other than on the top line. Or any energy from any of the lines. Right?
They don't have that now though, Matt. They don't have scoring on the wings now besides the top line. Right.
But if you're going to move on from,
but he's the only player other than the top line that brings any energy to the team that plays on the wing. You're not getting it from
when this team
you're
is
not getting it from Hoffman. You're not getting it from Armia. You're not getting it from Pezzetta. You're not getting it from fucking Pitlick. You're not getting it from any of those guys. You're only going to get it from Anderson. And yes, like I'm talking about him because I do like him. And I think that he's been a solid contributor. Maybe he's, you know, overpaid a little bit. Yes. But they went out They went out and they got the player that they were looking for X amount of years. And it's going to take quite a package to get him out of Montreal, in my opinion.
I don't think he's overpaid. I wouldn't say he's overpaid. I think he's paid right where he should be right now. I think he will be overpaid in 2 to 3 years.
Right.
That's what I think.
Right. And that's what I'm getting at. That's what I want to bring up is the fact that what's he going to be like in 3 years when this team is supposedly in its window? How essentially is he to that team?
Yeah.
So moving on from him this year or next is probably your best bet for
it's gonna depend on the return and how he's and how he's playing, because right now he's playing with speed, he's getting in on the forecheck, he's creating some offense for his line when other guys aren't doing as much. And I'm liking what I'm seeing from him just based on the fact that it's taken a little bit off of the top line of having to, you know, get a puck into the zone.
Well, based on all that, based on your thought on this, what would it take for the Devils to pry Anderson out of the lineup?
I'd have to look at their prospects, to be honest. Like, it would.
Would it take an Alexander Holtz? Would it take a Nemich?
Yeah, they wouldn't. There's no way they give up a Nemich.
No, right? But they could give up a.
They wouldn't give like Nemich and Hughes are going to be the two guys that are going to be no touch in terms of prospects.
So,
and Holtz is probably in that same bubble. You might be able to get someone like a Nolan Foote out of them or something like that.
Or M20, Mukomulmudum, and a first round pick or something. But is that enough? I mean, there's probably going to be a bidding war for this guy.
Right.
Kevin Ball, maybe. Plus, I would say maybe a first round pick. If they're going for a B-level prospect, they're going to get a first round pick with him.
Yeah.
Whether it's this year or next year, they're still going to. Maybe a Nico Dawes, a young goalie.
That could be part of a package, yeah.
Yeah.
I said it's hard to say. It's just the way that I'm looking at the team right now. I'm liking what he brings, and
one piece would it take for you to say, okay, yeah, no problem, I'm sold
on the
cues for him straight up.
I don't know, because the pieces that they're not going to want to move one of their current pieces to bring in Josh Anderson. It's not like they're gonna take a Hughes, Heischer, a Bratt, Sharankovich, you know, Zetterlin, those kind of guys, like guys that are in their top six right now. It's not like they're gonna move them out.
No.
Right? It's not like you're gonna say, okay, give us Tatar back for a year. Or anything like that. Right. And even Tatar's playing well right now on that line.
So and Andre Palat's on his way back soon too.
Right. So I honestly am not sure, to be honest.
I would say a first and a probably one of their high defensive prospects, not named Nemec.
Nemec or Hughes.
Yeah.
But but I would trade him, and I agree everything you say, but I really don't care about that this year. That's the thing. Like, this is the year, or this year, or next year, or I really don't care if we lose that spark on our team on the secondary scoring. We don't have a lot of it to begin with. We don't really want to finish close to a playoff spot anyway. and like we want to finish bottom 10. I want to say bottom 10 because I've been saying bottom 10 the whole since before the season started. So they go bottom 5. I don't want that. I want bottom 10 so I look right. So I think if they're going to get rid of him, now would be the time. I also like him too. I like him on the team. I know Hughes and Gordon really like him. I just think in 2 to 3 years, you're now paying $5.5 million for a third line winger. And you're going to be wanting to look to get rid of that contract to put in someone who can plug in the top, one of the top two lines to make a run. So,
and this is where their plan in the long term comes into play. Cause St. Louis looking at the right now, he's got a process. He wants to develop everybody, but Hughes and Gordon have to look at the long term. And you have to think, okay, yeah, he's a great impact player for them right now. He's worth everything right now. But in 3 years, when we're supposed to be having this competitive team, where does he fit? And I don't, like you said, Trey, I don't know. I don't think he fits in a top six role. Because
unless
by then...
Unless Slabowski falls off the rails and doesn't, for me,
it's going to depend on who they bring in when some of these contracts are starting to move out. If you can move out a Hoffman, when you get the cap money back for Dadonov, that kind of stuff, are you looking to move on from a guy like Armia, etc.? Like, what other pieces can you bring into your lineup? And the guys that are coming up, how fast can they get into the lineup to possibly challenge for some of these spots?
This is just it. I think you see Beck and Yolen in a Canadian next year. I think he's Lane Hudson's a defenseman, but I think you might see Sean Farrell and Waugh not far behind. I don't think next year, but I don't think they're going to be far behind. Whether they play, I believe they're bottom six. I don't believe they're top six, but you know what I mean. But Yolen and Beck, I truly believe they're high. Habs next year. I think you're, if you lose Dadonov and Monahan, those two are plugging those holes right there.
Right.
And that brings me up to another point, Jake Evans. Jake Evans is having a terrible season this year compared to last year. Great at faceoffs, good defensively, great penalty killer, solid fourth liner, but offensive-wise,
he's not
even close to what he was last year.
Yeah, he's
not
really
even close. And he was playing with the AHL plugs most of the season last year.
Yeah.
Right? He hasn't helped Slupkowski at all. Slupkowski's trying to make plays on that line, and they're dying as soon as they get on Evans or Pezzetta's stick. I don't know what it is. I can't put my finger on it because when you watch him play, he doesn't look terrible, but just nothing's working for him. And when you have a guy like Owen Beck, who's probably close to coming to the Canadiens, Evans is expendable.
Yeah.
So is Dvorak, for that matter. But
well, let's see here.
Well, right now, like, we're talking about guys that could be traded off, and like, I know we're getting off a little bit off topic, but what about a guy like Monahan being able to flip him? He's looked good since.
Oh yeah, he's gone at the deadline.
Gordon pretty much said on the Sick podcast that Monahan's, without saying he's not staying, he's saying he's not staying.
Honestly, from what he's brought into the team. I wouldn't be against trading him to bring him back for another year. So far, what I've been seeing.
If you're bringing Beck in next year, you don't bring Monahan back.
I don't think Beck's going to make it next year. He's close. But I see him having another year in the OHL where he's going to dominate, and then go from there.
We don't know who they're going to draft either.
That's true. That's true.
This year's top 10 is filled with centers.
Right.
It's either going to be Beck or whoever they draft in the top 10 playing next year on the Habs. I'm telling you right now. And they'll probably be a third line center to start.
Not to mention Monahan's, if he continues the way he is now,
he's going to get
a good first round pick.
He should get a decent return. Yeah.
So that would be 2 first round picks simply for taking on his cap.
Taking on his contract, yeah. Which would be great for the Canadians if they can do so. I've grown to enjoy how he's been playing. I think he's looked good. He's one of their best forwards out there tonight. So he's only growing his stock.
He had a beautiful top shelf goal tonight. You know, from Inclusive. Oh no, he missed that one. He had the 175 foot shot. That's right. I like Monahan. I think he's playing great. He's on a 50 point pace, which is good for him. Coming from two hip surgeries, he's one of the few who's bringing secondary scoring to the team. Personally, think Slupkowski should be on his line, but that's just
going we've been saying that for topic. A long time. Saying that for a long time.
Yeah, and now Slupkowski did pick up a couple of power play shifts in the last couple of games. He had 14 some odd minutes against Buffalo, and he picked up just under 11 in tonight's game against Columbus. Now, he did play some with Dvorak and Gallagher, but again, he got shoved back down onto that line with Jake Evans. And this is where I'm going to kind of step away from what you guys are saying. Yes, Evans is not producing whatsoever. He's got 2 points through the season so far, but his underlying possession numbers are actually good, which is really weird.
So is Hoffman.
Yeah. Well, considering they're both playing against bottom six lines, like this is where they're supposed to be. And they're doing well against the people they're supposed to do well against. But for some reason, it's just not clicking. Yeah. And I agree with the whole.
Yeah,
and I agree with your point on Evans and Slafkowski, because the two, I don't know what it is, but it's not working.
I mean, I thought Slafkowski played very well on that second line. I thought he was actually the best player on the line. He drove the offense. Yeah. He tried to make plays. He still overreaches with the puck.
Yeah.
I mean, he still makes rookie mistakes, and that's fine. But I think on a line with Anderson and Monahan, I think that would be the perfect spot from now. I'm not Martin St. Louis, but I understand why they're doing what they're doing with Slafkowski. But I do believe it's time for him to move up on a permanent basis, even if it's just on the third line. Armia did nothing on that third line. He did absolutely nothing.
Well, he was only there because they're trying to give him a little bit of time to get back under, get his legs under him after being out for so long with an injury.
Well, he only had one practice with contact when he came back, so they kind of rushed him. But still.
Yeah, I agree. Hasn't done much. And this morning I got a question from Le Petit Viking on Twitter, and he mentioned a technical aspect of Slafkowski's game, and he wondered if cutting his stick down, maybe his stick's too long so that he would be able to shoot better. But Treg, you alluded to it like just a minute ago. He's leaning too far. He's always, when he's shooting, he's either leaning too far back. He's got that far back lean, which, I mean, if your arms are straight out, you're not going to get much going. Or he's leaning too far in and the puck comes into his feet and he'll fall down before he gets the shot. So he's got to work on setting himself properly before we can even worry about stick length.
That was a kind of a thing with Kotkaniemi too. Everyone thought if he shortened his stick, he'd have a better. I don't think Slafkowski's stick length is his issue. I think it's his positioning of the shoot, personally. That's what I think it is. He's just, which is weird because he shouldn't change his position because he's in the NHL based on, but maybe he didn't.
No,
maybe
I just think that the game is a little bit, the game's just a little bit faster than what he's used to, and he's still adjusting, so he's kind of reaching. He's reaching for pucks. Yeah, he's reaching for plays.
He tends to try to rush, and he does this one, he does this one arm thing too a lot, I find. He takes his hand off, and he tries to do everything with one hand on the stick, which I think is weird.
So we'll continue with the Columbus game. The Canadiens actually pulled off a win, which is impressive considering it's the second of a back-to-back night. And it was an ugly, ugly game. Like, it was just, it was like looking in a mirror.
Boring.
It's just ugly.
Up until 30 seconds left in the second period, I thought I was watching the World Cup. Like, it was fucking awful.
Are you actually watching the World Cup? I haven't watched one.
No, I'm not watching the World Cup. I'm not watching.
I would have watched Canada's game today had I not been at work.
No, I didn't even bother watching.
Ending our freedom.
You're not in Ottawa in a truck. Come on.
Toot toot.
No, before what I did get to see for that game, though, as you said, it was a snooze fest up till a few minutes left in the, a minute or so left in the second period. It was really Sam Montembeau was keeping them in it. He made some really good saves. Two consecutive breakaways. He was seeing the puck really well. Thought he played a great game overall. And he's, you know, other than the game that was against Columbus the last time he was out, he's, for the most part, he's put up a pretty good performance this season. The problem that I had was, other than the last, say, 30 minutes, give or take 30 seconds or so of the second period, everything was on the boards. Everything was around the boards, and everything was slow entry coming into the blue line or over the blue line. We're either going to stumble across and we're going to go offside, or we're going to come in with no speed, or we're going to play around the boards. And it was cycle it around the boards, get it to the blue line. Any shot that was on net never made it through, or the goalie had a very clear sight of the puck. Fast forward to the third period, all of a sudden they're like, hey, we could probably go up the middle of the ice and maybe we can score a goal. And then all of a sudden, you know, the Canadians walk away with a win.
I will give Columbus credit for the first two periods because they were pushing the Canadians outside. You know what I mean? They're pushing outside. And then once Columbus scored in the third, they kind of opened it up a bit. And, I mean, Jack Eye's shot, I don't even know how that went in. It went through everybody. I do know how it went in. Slafkovský did that little bypass, and the goalie just had no idea where the puck was. So,
right.
And he's an elite sniper. So that's why that went in.
Honestly, Jack Eye is one of the better defensemen on this team for getting pucks on net.
Yeah, he is.
Oh, he has a great shot.
Yeah, Kovacevic is the other one too. Eventually, he's going to get a goal. He's going to get Kovacevic. He's good at getting pucks through. And
if he quit shooting at the belly pad, yes,
eventually
he'll get
him. Exactly. But tonight, you got your two elite snipers in Safard and Jack Eye that essentially won the game for you.
And what was the common denominator for those two goals, the Jack Eye goal and the Savard goal?
People going to the net.
Ding, ding, ding.
Bodies in front of the net.
Right.
And that the first two periods, there was actually Mike Johnson brought it up on the broadcast. He said, Canadians are getting a lot of shots in on the net, but nobody's going to the net.
No second chances.
There was no high definition shots in the first two periods by the Montreal Canadiens.
And even the goal that Columbus scored, like, that was just a farce. You had full possession of the puck, and then all of a sudden it was literally a forecheck that, and the puck got flopped out, and all of a sudden it's in the back of the net. And like, I felt bad for Montembeau for that one. Like, it was a farce, and I was like, oh, here we go, down 1-0 on a goal like that. Here we go. So I'm happy. So I'm happy the Canadians responded, and at the end of the day, they come out of Columbus with a win. And Suzuki Caulfield didn't even have a shot on goal.
But he had an assist.
They still won the game.
Yeah. Just to give you guys a little numerical view as to how exciting the game was, I'm looking at Natural Stat Trick right now, and the high danger chances for the Canadians was 3. And the high danger chances against the Canadians was 6. 9 high danger chances in total in that game. Normally, one team has at least that.
Yeah, and 2 of them happened in 10 seconds for Columbus.
Burner.
Yeah. I said, like, I probably would have got more action watching the World Cup, to be honest.
You know, ironically, 2 of the Canadians' goals are not high danger chances. It was.
You know what? Until the third period,
I'll take it.
I almost turned it off. I was so bored.
I'll take any victory they can get at this point. And you know, now they relax a little bit, head on to Chicago for a 2 o'clock game for which is going to be the weirdest shit ever, but I'm going to be home, so I'll be able to watch it. 2 o'clock game against the Blackhawks, another team that's been struggling. They're going to go up against one of their former coaches and Luke Richardson. So we'll see. We'll see. I'm hoping that it'll be another W, but who knows at this point.
Now, I know Caulfield didn't score at all in this game, but he did show a lot of other areas of his game that's evolving. On the Jack Eye, was it the Jack Eye goal? No, it was the Savard goal. He did a controlled zone entry.
Yeah.
Made a cross ice pass through traffic to Doc. who then got the puck over to Savard. So Caulfield is now controlling the play more. He's not relying on everybody else anymore. He's taking some of that on himself. He's forechecking much, much better, and he's using his speed and his body positioning for that. He'll never be an elite forechecker, but he's adding all these different aspects to his game, and he's still scoring more than Austin Matthews.
I just like the simple play that he made to get the puck and had a chance at an open net after Corpusello kind of gaffed the puck to him. And that was almost a scoring, a better scoring chance than what they had the whole game.
He actually almost put that in the top corner. It literally just
right. Missed. But just based on his hard work. And I like that. As you said, he's never going to be like a full fledged forechecker or anything like that, but you're even seeing when he comes into the zone, like he's controlling the game. He's able to bring it down to his speed, and he's being creative, and it's going to cost the Canadians some money. Let's just say that.
Apparently, they're in negotiations.
According to
Marco D'Amico, they started negotiations this week.
Yeah, as they should be.
Yeah, and before the season started, I wrote about comparables for him, and I figured about 9% of the salary cap is what he's going to be going for. Now, with them saying that the cap next year is going to go up by $4 million, that would mean that his contract would have to be above $8.5 million.
I don't think he gets more than Suzuki.
No,
that's the thing.
No, he won't.
That's the thing.
Yeah,
I think do they pay that? I think he gets 7.5 to 8.
Or the exact same dollar amount.
What's Suzuki making right now?
7.87.
It's a 7.87? I thought it was 8.5. Yeah. He's
averaging 7.87.
Yeah, he'll get... Right. See, Suzuki's a center, though, so he's more important and should get paid more. I don't know. 7.5. I'm going to say 7.5. If Suzuki's only 7.8, then I only see him getting maybe 7.5. I mean, Suzuki has one of the 10 worst contracts in the league. So
it's true. Horrible.
Yeah.
On pace for 100 points as a top center, captain of a team. What a garbage contract.
He's not even a number one center on a contender. The only reason he's getting the points is because he's on Montreal. He's playing on the top line.
He's definitely no Austin Matthews, who is a true number one center on a true contender. I mean, just compare the two. Look at their playoff performances. Matthews kills it. And by that, I mean their actual chances at winning a playoff series.
Hey,
I find it odd on that stupid friggin' top 10 list, not a single Maple Leaf, even though someone like Tavares, who's still producing right now, his $11 million contract is going to look like shit in about 3 years.
His $11 million contract looks like shit now only because it's keeping them from getting the pieces they need to make it through the playoffs.
Darn.
Although I will say he's having a resurgence of a year. It's been a great year.
It's all good. There'll be a future Sue Greyhound in the lineup.
Absolutely.
To come help them out. So,
I mean, Tavares is doing so well. He's almost... average, he's almost on pace for the same number of goals as Caulfield or Suzuki. Almost.
Actually, I think he scored tonight, so he has 12. It's the same as Caulfield.
Mm-hmm.
pretty sure he scored tonight.
Anyway, this season is more about the progression of the players versus actual wins. So seeing how Caulfield has progressed his game a little bit while still producing, Suzuki has grown his game while still producing. Jack Eye has stepped in and shown that he is an NHL player. Gouley, Slavkovsky's growing from game to game. All the young guys, even Harris, who had a couple of bad nights recently, but overall has looked fairly good. So the Canadians have a lot of really good young players on the roster now, and how they develop and learn from games like this. This game against Columbus was absolute trash, but learning how to win games like that is going to pay off in the future.
And the Habs have never lost three in a row.
This year.
I think that's a great stat. I mean, it's things to look forward to. Like, they're consistently consistent. They're inconsistently consistent. That's what it is. Lose two in a row, win three, lose two, win one, lose one.
Doesn't that make them consistently inconsistent as well? That's a consistency. So they've been consistent all year.
Correct.
Snake is eating its tail.
They've been inconsistently consistent, but also consistently inconsistent, therefore consistent. The Air Force guy's mind just got blown. He's just, he has no idea what's going on. Plane goes up.
Yeah, plane goes up. Then it's magic from there.
Heligo vroom.
Yeah.
Matt, anything else on the game?
I got nothing. I'm just looking forward to the game on Friday, and I'm just hoping that we're going to get a little bit more of an exciting game and just some constant effort. Maybe, you know, the shit you took in Buffalo and then the third period from this game and kind of combine the two and come up with the best line you can. Interesting to see who sits. If Jack Eye's going to sit again, or if Kovacevic is going to sit again, and it's hard to say. It's kind of a bad problem to have right now. Is some of the lines that have been working so well, now all of a sudden you get Matheson back in the lineup, who's a guy that's not going to sit out, and you're sitting decent defenseman just to rotate another guy in.
This is why I think there's going to be a move made fairly soon.
Right.
A waiver move, someone going down to the minors.
Maybe they need to move a defenseman, though. So Weidman or Edmondson. Edmondson to Toronto, they need a defenseman. Someone who can actually get through the playoffs.
They ever play for Sault Ste. Marie?
So it's not happening.
It's not happening.
But no, I more than likely it's if they're going to move a defenseman, it's going to be Harris or Jack Eye going down to the minors because they don't have to clear waivers.
Right.
So they'll do a paper, they'll send them down, they'll play a little bit there, call them up back and forth, trade them back and forth, and that'll buy them more time until they can finally make a trade.
Right.
I think it'll be Harris going down than Jack Eye based on the recent play, to be honest with you. I was with you up until about a week ago that it would be Jack Eye, but I think it's going to be Harris now just based on the recent play.
Yeah, I agree.
Can't argue it.
Yeah.
All right. Final thoughts, Treg. Any final thoughts?
No. Just enjoy the roller coaster ride. Actually, it's not even a roller coaster ride. The Habs are exactly the team we thought they'd be. They're actually better than what we thought they'd be. So let's just enjoy it while it goes. See what happens.
No shout outs to all our fans in Brandon.
I'm not in Brandon anymore. Oh, I meant to go out to see Scholey the other night, but I was too wiped and tired and I didn't bother. But so sorry about that, buddy. I know I was supposed to contact you to go out. I'm now in Winnipeg. I get to listen to the karaoke going on in the bar below me in the hotel here. So Gonna be a good night.
So you'll be getting off of here and then going to join karaoke after this?
No, I'll be getting off of here and probably trying to sleep through the karaoke because I have to get up early in the morning to get to the airport. So
okay, try your best. If not, just go down there, sing some sing some John Denver, have a couple drinks, you're good to go.
Steer into the skid.
Yeah.
Yeah. Might as well. Have some toothless woman try to pick me up or something. I don't know.
I'm just surprised you didn't go downtown Brandon. I hear it's hopping.
I was downtown Brandon. Downtown Brandon is literally one spot. It's one road. One. That's it. My hotel, the Keg, Applebee's, the Wheat Kings rink, and fortunately for me, I found a good life up the road, so I was in my happy spot. So
tried to find a corner store, but there's no corners there. So
there, I literally drove for 20 minutes looking for a store because there's one road and then there's these little side roads with houses on it. That's it. Everything is on the one, the 18th and 10th. It's two different roads, but it's the same road.
Jeez. I bet Sholi's so happy we brought him up this episode.
He's probably happy that the Habs won. He wasn't so happy yesterday. I mean, maybe it's good I didn't meet him because it was a bad game. So
yeah, you don't know. He might be very prickly.
Ooh.
For those who are not in the military or the Canadian military, that's a military joke.
And his gnome was probably pretty pissy too. So.
Gnome saying?
Yeah, I wouldn't want to get on the wrong side of that gnome.
What about you, Matt? Any final thoughts?
I got nothing. Enjoying a couple of days off now after Air Forcing the last week or so. So it'll be nice to relax a little bit and get caught up on some stuff around the house. And book my tickets
Sit
to fly.
In a different chair.
And book my tickets to fly out east for Christmas.
Don't you just hop on the military flights or something?
Actually,
like that?
They're actually not doing that. They're actually not doing that this year.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah, they're actually not
doing
that.
They did those during pandemic times, but they're not doing it this year.
That's right.
They used to do it every year. They used to do it every year for people.
Yeah, not doing it this year. And my squadron's one of the ones that does it. And they're not doing it. It's usually the Airbus that pushes it. They're not doing it. And we've got too many operations going on to pick up the slack, so we're not doing either.
Terrible. Too many roller derbies in your wheelie chairs.
That's right.
You can't take the time out to get a plane ready.
That's right.
Wait, chairs have wheels in them?
They do in the Air Force.
All
on a ship, they don't.
All of our chairs have wheels.
Wheels on a chair on a ship is a bad thing.
Unless it's tied. Unless it's tied to the table on a string, right. And then you're just.
It's one of my favorite games. Couch surfing in the mess.
Yeah. Start at one end and up to the other.
Just stand on the couch. Off you go. All right. So I just want to finish off the episode and tell all of our American friends and listeners. Happy American Thanksgiving. We did it first. You guys are just copying us now. So, gobble, gobble. Thanks for listening. Thank you for interacting. Keep up the emails. Keep up the comments. Keep up just goofing off with us online. We really appreciate it. And remember, if you're talking about it, so are we.
Do, did, will. The Story of People podcast is now available on the Crier Media Network. The first 5 episodes are here and feature some incredible guests that fit into one or all 3 of those categories. Ready? Tara Sloan from the San Jose Sharks, Undercurrent podcast at NBC Sports. Marianne Iveson from Iveson Voice and the Let's Take This Outside podcast to talk about the world of outdoors as well as voiceover land. Ariana Hunsicker, future Canadian Paralympic swimmer, already winning tons of awards for this country. Scott McGregor from the Hot Wallet podcast to dumb down the world of crypto, Bitcoin, and NFTs so you don't have to. And Jackie Holowaty from Climate Pledge Arena in Seattle, Washington, the first net zero carbon certified arena on the planet. Wherever you get your pods, wherever you watch your pods, and on the Crier Media Network.
I'm Jeff Woods, and I'm shining a light on music and the rock stars who make it.
He just was one of those people. He stood out.
He was a magic guy. He really was a magic guy. We all have force. He had the same amount of force as we all have.
This was before Led Zeppelin. Robert was full on. I mean, he was Led Zeppelin without the band behind him. He had the hair, the jeans, the whole thing, you know. And he was amazing.
The Records and Rockstars podcast, heard around the world and yours to hear wherever you get podcasts. All the episodes from JeffWoodsRadio.com.